Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the iPro Strategies to Reduce Avoidable Acute Care Hospitalization conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should need any assistance during the conference, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Vicky Agramonte.
Thank you, Shira. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's presentation. We appreciate you joining us. This is part of our monthly educational series to support your implementation of the HHQI National Campaign Best Practice Intervention Packages, and today's focus is going to be on telemonitoring. Those of you who registered for today's conference were forwarded via email a copy of the slides that will be referenced during this presentation, along with your program evaluation. Please don't forget to send that back to us. You know how important it is. And if you did not register, please feel free to log on to www.ipro.org and follow, click on Professionals and follow the Home Health tab, and then click on Home Health Quality Initiative and scroll down to the upcoming events section. And this presentation is at the top of that, that web page. And as Yashira said, as a reminder, this call is being being audio recorded, and it's going to be posted to that same section of the home health part of our website. Your lines are currently muted at this time, but we will be opening the lines up at the end for some discussion. And I also like to mention to you guys, I didn't know, you know, in our email, we have joining us today on the call is Lexi Silver, who is the Director of Development and Special Projects from the Home Care Association of New York State. And we're very happy to have her here with us. And she's also going to be discussing some legislative issues that I'm sure will be of interest to you all. So stay tuned. It should be a good presentation. Okay. So again, this is our HHQI on Best Practice Intervention Package is on telemonitoring. And this is part of our LANE, our Local Area Network of Excellence, which includes all home care associations and healthcare associations that you know are great supports to you all, and especially in your initiatives to institute a successful telemonitoring program. So if you're following along with our presentation slides, I'm going to be starting on slide 3. We thought it would be helpful to give you a campaign update. We've been receiving a lot of feedback, and we want to feed that back to you, so hopefully you can move forward with this campaign and keep it as successful as it's been. I'm not sure if any of you noticed that the technical expert panel for this month's intervention package included my colleagues, Sarah Butterfield and Chris Stiegel, and also Lori Neander, the CEO of At Home Care, also gave feedback on this package. So we're very proud that New York was asked to give our feedback prior to its release. For the Best Practice Intervention Monthly Survey comments, there's been confusion. Now, remember, when these survey results are reported, these are nationwide results. So this may not necessarily be a concern of New York because we have not heard this from you. But certainly we want to keep you abreast of this. This could be something on your mind that's kind of come up and requires some clarification. The first issue that's come up is there's confusion in websites. We have, of course, all the information in QI from every setting that you'd ever need on medquick.org. So agencies have been searching for the homehealthquality.org information, the intervention packages, on MedQuick. Now, since we're so far into the campaign, it's really received the attention that we were hoping it would receive. What they've done is they've put a link on medquick.org that will take you directly back to the homehealthquality.org website. So you can access the campaign materials from either homehealthquality.org, where you should have been receiving them every month or accessing them, as well as being able to access them on medquick.org. Of course, we heard the concerns, and we certainly can understand that there's been difficulty reviewing these packages on a monthly basis. So we just want to give you some ideas that have come up. One, and I'm going to be talking more about telemonitoring. If you have no intention of instituting a telemonitoring program at this time, this is one of the packages where you guys can take a break and continue moving forward with front loading and phone monitoring, because telehealth as a whole is an important part of our initiative to reduce acute care hospitalizations. But you need to really be able to pick and choose what's going to work for you. Now, what may work also, and I'll go through some of the other ideas, is being able to look at the upcoming list of what's going to be released. There's 12 strategies overall throughout the entire campaign. What strategies are going to work best for you? Which ones maybe were you hoping to institute and really just didn't have the materials or the time to pull together? And this can be maybe in September with the immunization package being released, and knowing how important that incorporating that strategy into your ACH plan of action is going to be. So already here at the beginning of August, you know you may want to take a peek at the September package. So we're going to also look at a few ways that people are looking at those packages and disseminating it to them, to their staff. Some of the ideas that came up from the survey results were, and I know it, when we had our national call, I strongly felt that the question that our providers were asked wasn't quite clear. It asked, do you distribute the best intervention packages to your staff? Where most of you replied no. In your shoes, I would say no as well, because the last thing we'd want is to hand our staff an 80-page packet to review. But what they really meant, do you distribute the individual discipline tracks before staff meetings, or before, or having a journal club type of approach to having them review the 5 or 6 pages, where actually it's just 1 or 2 pages of text that kind of outlines what the strategy is, how it associates with your efforts to reduce your acute care hospitalization rate, and then it has the audio or the podcast. Without a teenager at home now, I said a podcast was not a familiar term to me, and I'm sure those of you who don't have children at home now are going through the same thing. But there's a really neat 10-12-minute podcast that your staff can listen to, so they really get the gist of what you're hoping to accomplish with this strategy. And then there's the post-test. That could be taken online, or it could be Xeroxed and distributed. So, again, you know, you don't want to overwhelm your staff, but as a supervisor, I was adamant about my staff being able to review what's current in the literature as well as what's current in, you know, with what we're doing as a nation. Remember, they're going to follow your lead, and if it's important to you, it's going to be important to them. So that's just a few ideas. Also, some agencies had reported that they were having lunch and learns. Where they were serving food, of course, you know, with our clinicians, you have to feed them. And just having this quick lunch and learn to go over the strategy and get your staff's opinion on what they think about it and how it could be incorporated into what you're already doing. Going on to the next slide, on slide 4, we've been encouraging agencies who are unable to review the package to review the fast track. And a lot of you have told us that you have, and we're really happy to hear that. But also, there's a 15-minute WebEx for every month's intervention package, where if you don't have the time to sit and read, and I know all of us are become masters at multitasking, that you'd be able to sit while you're doing something else, have the WebEx on your computer, and it's actually explaining to you what the best practice intervention package contains and how it may apply to what you're trying to do in your agency. So it's another way to kind of get through this information quickly. Also, for continuing education updates, based on your survey results, LPN CEUs will now be available in September, in our next package in September of 2007. Also, just as a little plug for the telemonitoring survey on the homehealthquality.org website, many of you have participated in the very fast survey. The survey is available right now for the telemonitoring package, actually until Friday. And we've seen the Northeast hasn't been highlighted as Agency of the Month. And, you know, we'd really, really like to see one of you guys get chosen as Agency of the Month. The only way you can do that is if you respond to the survey. It takes less than 5 minutes, and it's a very quick, it's actually a 14-question survey, and it could take less than 5 minutes. So come on, get out there, and let's get one of our agencies showcased. Okay. So we're going to go over some of our objectives for today. I've moved on to slide 5. We're going to define telemonitoring. We're going to identify barriers and solutions to telemonitoring planning and implementation. We're going to evaluate the current use of telemonitoring. identify resources for developing and sustaining an efficient telemonitoring program. And, of course, Lexi is going to be updating us on HCA telehealth initiatives and legislation. Hard to believe summer's almost over, but I've kind of taken on the theme, you know, to give you guys some hope. You've already made it through the summer. It's almost over. And this will conclude the Simply Summer series with this month's package of telemonitoring. Going on to slide 7. As I said, you know, I thought I'd give you the old stop sign here, that this package truly is designed for people who either are implementing, planning to implement, or have already implemented a telehealth program. So, you know, as much as we love having you on this call, this could be your moment to take a deep breath and continue with your other strategies that have been implemented prior to this month's strategy. Certainly, you're more than welcome to stay with us if you'd like, but this package is designed for those groups in particular. Okay, we're going on to slide 8. I'm going to define telemonitoring. Telemonitoring includes the collection of clinical data and the transmission of such data between a patient at a distant location and a healthcare provider through electronic information processing technologies. The provider conducts a clinical review of the transferred data and provides a response relating to such data. Telemonitoring is the more sophisticated type of home health, of telehealth. So, apparently, you know, pretty much, you know, they did a nice, I had a professor that used to call the sentence smog. It's an awful lot of words describing what we do, and simply stated, telemonitoring is our remote care delivery between a patient and her place of residence and a professional using electronic technologies. And going on to slide 9, I took this out of the Home Telehealth Reference 2005, and just to demonstrate the different levels of complexity within the telehealth system, all working very well if they're utilized properly. Our basic is, of course, phone monitoring and just using the technology of our phone systems. A medium level of complexity is telemonitoring, and certainly, you know, we've listed the most common types of technology used for that type of telehealth. An advanced telehealth is pretty much using the synchronous data transmission. It's two-way. More likely we see this in our video transmissions or video telehealth. So just to kind of give you a broad spectrum of how we define telehealth as a whole. I'm going to move on to slide 10. I added this slide here because for those of you who are just starting to receive your Department of Health grant monies and are starting to purchase the equipment, which I know a lot of you have, and we're very excited for you. As leaders, you really want to know right up front exactly all you need to do. And we do know that a lot of the vendors provide you with consultation. But again, you know, a lot of this information is already available to you in this package and in other resources, which I'll tell you about later on. You really need to be aware that your staff may not be quite as thrilled about this as you are. So being able to take the time involving your staff from the beginning, making sure they clearly understand your goals and initiative for this initiative is paramount. The staff must be involved from the beginning, or else, again, they're going to look at this as another thing to do. As far as your staff is concerned, they can go make this visit and get everything that that you would receive from telemonitoring. So we're going to go over some of those challenges and some solutions that we've posed for you. But it's important to know all that you need to, that you're going to need to tackle and what some of these challenges are going to be to have a successful telemonitoring program. We're going to go on to slide 11. We're going to go through some of the benefits. We can actually have an entire presentation of the benefits of telemonitoring. It goes without saying there's a tremendous benefit to everyone with the use of this type of technology, and it's very exciting. But our benefit to our patients, it's going to reinforce their patient self-management, which enables them to correlate the changes in their health status with the use of their meds, with the changes in their diet, and with their activity level. Also, some of the benefits are using this level of technology with the patients who are not adherent or have not adhered to their medical regime in the past. There's nothing more powerful than a patient being able to see what happens with and without meds on a daily basis with their vital signs and their weights. Also for patients, you know, who kind of have Chinese food more than twice a week and are on diuretics, be able to see the changes of their diet with the weight, all of a sudden they're like, whoa, okay, you know, this is pretty scary to see this. You know, let me, you know, not engage in this type of behavior. So it does, you know, help a patient see the consequences of their negative health choices or decisions. So, you know, you think of it that way also. Going on to slide 12, the benefits to your staff. It's going to be able to help them provide visits based on the patient's need. It's going to reduce unnecessary nursing visits. It's going to help them manage and increase caseload. It's also the ability to reinforce patient self-management skills. And also, of course, for the staff to be able to identify early signs of decompensation in a patient. But you really need to use your champion nurses to spread this word for you because, again, not all staff is going to feel this way. The benefits to your organization, going on to slide 13. One, it's going to support an efficient service utilization. Cost reduction through a decrease in travel and expenses. It's going to be increased value to the community, to the physicians, to the hospitals, and your payers. It's going to also provide you with a marketing edge from competitors who are not using these technologies. And also, of course, it's going to reduce your emergent care and ACH rate. Going on to slide number 14. Benefit to physicians. And we're going to talk a lot about physicians because we know they're a tough sell for you. For the benefit for physicians, they're going to have an improvement in the management of chronic diseases. There's going to be decreased calls to the physician from the patient. And there will be a decrease in acute care hospitalization by the early identification of symptoms. Now, we know that you've had challenges with getting physician buy-in in the past. A few things I want to just let you know about. There's a demonstration taking place right now with the physician group practice demonstration with CMS to start pay-for-performance from CMS for Medicare recipients with physicians. What I'm going to tell you is if you've tried and tried in the past couple of years to get physicians to buy into this and you can't, don't stop trying. Physicians are becoming are under more and more pressure to, one, improve how they handle patients with chronic diseases. Also, they're going to start having their quality monitored as well, and we knew this was coming, and it's happening now. Publicly reporting quality measures will be across settings as promised. So don't stop. You know, if you've had a hard sell in the past, doctors will be stepping up to the plate, advancing in technology within their offices and wanting to engage with agencies that, you know, engage in this type of technology as well. So what we also recommend is, of course, choosing a champion physician. Who do you work well with? Who is your top referrer? You know, go cardiology, which cardiologist you work well with. Certainly is one of the best ways to start out if you're starting out this program. Going on to slide 15, we're going to take a few minutes to talk about a few challenges. The four that were highlighted in this best practice intervention package was, one, the underutilization of monitoring units. A very nice way of saying, are your units sitting on the darn shelf, and how do you get them off? Two, the patient's refusal of monitoring. I'm sure you've heard your staff say that in the past. Three, difficulty engaging your physicians. And four, that you're having difficulty monitoring the effectiveness of your units. Is it really reducing your ACH and emergent care rate, and can you prove that? So we're going to take some time talking about this. Let's go on to slide 16. Let's talk about why your staff is concerned and why the units may be sitting on the shelf. And again, you know, take some solace in knowing that this is a nationwide problem. New York is not alone with its challenge to get these units off the shelf and into the field. But I think that we need to take some time and back up, take a deep breath on why this is happening, okay? We know how busy the staff is, but there may be an underlying cause or a barrier that's, you're making it difficult for them to get them out there quickly. So a lot of the things listed here, of course, came right out of your best practice intervention package. And some of the staff concerns are of a lack of a person-to-person contact with the patient, fear and distrust of technology, unsure of the patient assessment accuracy via a telephone contact, They're also concerned that an increased caseload means more coordination and case management responsibilities, and also that there's the time needed for installation and deinstallation is adding on to an already cumbersome time that it takes to conduct a comprehensive assessment. So let's go back to the beginning on this one, because I want you guys to really take this one home. A lack of person-to-person contact with patients. Again, staff that don't believe in technology, and you know who your staff are if you've become computerized, you know, and even the use of cell phones in some situations really threw a lot of our nurses off, and not everyone gets excited about this level of technology. There's also a general distrust in this level of technology. You hear your staff say, well, when I took her blood pressure, it was 120 over 70. This monitor's reading 170 over 90. So, again, is this creating additional work? You know, giving your staff ideas of why that may be taking place, why there may be some variation in vitals when the visit is being conducted as opposed to the patient being in front of the monitor. You really need to listen to your staff while they're telling you their concerns, because they are real. This is something more for them to do and learn, but the more that they learn of the advantages of this level of technology and that this is the way we're going in the future, you know, kind of get on board type of thing, the more that they'll go for it. But they need to hear that from you as their leaders. Unsure of a patient assessment accuracy via a telephone contact. Let's think about this. Most of us as nurses, we take a lot of confidence in that, one, we can, while we're assessing a patient, we're using observation to do that. We're picking up hints of a problem that a patient may not be actually telling us about. Now, how have you trained your staff to assess a situation by phone? We talked a lot about that back in June. We had a great teleconference to talk about phone monitoring and assessment by phone. You know, initially, your staff may need some help with some scripting. If I have a patient who's had a 4-pound weight gain in 2 days, I'm calling this patient. The patient's telling the nurse, I'm okay, I'm fine. Okay, but we've seen some changes. How does your staff handle that? Do they need some help, you know, and some coaching getting over that to really get to the heart of the problem, get, you know, ask the right questions to be able to contact the physician and intervene before a further decline occurs? So that's important that we really really listen to that. They may be unsure of their assessment by phone. Again, there isn't a nurse out there in home care who's going to celebrate getting an increased caseload if I'm already carrying 22 to 25 patients. So you're telling me now I can carry 32? Okay, so think about that. That is never going to be good news for a home care nurse. But your champion nurses are going to say, you know what? This is a way that I can manage a large caseload. You know who your high performers are. I can carry a large caseload and manage them effectively by truly visiting those who need me to visit first. So you're going to have to deal with your varying levels of staff. And if you're new to implementation, if you're just getting started, I'm going to strongly recommend, like we do with everything, using a pilot group and getting the kinks out of your system before you go full implementation to your agency. Okay, because the full implementation and the problems that may occur is going to hinder your staff's buy-in for the future. So take the time, use one or two champions who are excited, who are going to spread the word for you, who are your innovators in your agency, and take it from there, and you're going to see that you're going to have a great response for the future of this. The time needed for installation and deinstallation. Whether you're using video or non-video, there's always going to be that time that it takes to install, regardless of how simple the vendor you've chosen, regardless of how simple their setup is, there's a time factor associated with installation. And truly, does your nurses or therapists need to be the one that installs these units? It's been well documented in the literature the length of time it takes to conduct a non-complex OASIS start of care assessment, and that can just the assessment can be as long as 90 minutes, not including the patient's Bill of Rights, advanced directives, and the other paperwork that needs to be signed at a start of care visit. So really think very carefully about how much one clinician can handle on a start of care visit. And every time a nurse is being asked to do this type of work, it's time taken away from the patient. Now, of course, once it's installed, if you choose to have it installed, by anyone else besides the clinician, that clinician is going to be the one that introduces it to the patient, that teaches them how to use it. Because, again, that's part of the teaching that promotes their self-management. So it goes right in line with a care plan for a nurse or a therapist to be able to promote this self-management in a patient. So it just puts a lot of thought into that. I'm going to move on to slide 17. I'm going to talk about some patient concerns. I think this was important, especially if you're hearing patient refusals from your staff, that the patient is really refusing to have this in their home. Some of the patient concerns, and I can hear my father saying this, can't use a computer, so how am I going to use a telemonitor equipment? Very valuable information on this slide. What do I do if I can't get it to work? I'm going to jump down. Can your agency see me all the time? This is certainly a concern with patients, regardless of mental health issues or not. Certainly our televisions and the shows that are on TV kind of indicate that there's a way that somebody is always watching through your computer, and that is a concern that needs to be dealt with our patients. And, of course, will they have to pay for the service is a big issue as well. So there's some tips we have in the resource part of the presentation that can help you deal with some of these patient concerns. Moving on to the next slide, on slide 18, physician concerns. And I know you guys have heard this, and those of you who haven't, you're going to. There's physician concerns related to, one, they are completely distrustful, not completely. Many physicians don't trust technology. I remember there were some physicians in rural New York who don't have a fax machine. So, again, how are we going to convince the physician of the value of this level of technology when they don't hold a value in it with themselves in their own practice? And again, that may not be the physician you want to start with. Data overload. Doctors are inundated. They're being called. Hospitals, nursing homes, home care, they're being called. They have data coming out of their ears. And increased contacts from the agencies. I know as leaders, you've heard this concern over and over again. You know, if I have one more pile of paperwork or one more phone call from home care, they're going to scream. But again, finding ways that this can work to the physician's advantage is certainly the way to move your marketing forward. Also, I know many organizations have web access to their data, their telemonitoring data, which would be really great for a physician to have. You know, if there's, I'm sure, ways to allow physicians to access this information online at their leisure, and that be part of the care plan, that the physician will access the information Q2 weeks, or if there's a change in patient status. Also, just making sure that you've communicated clearly with the physician on when they would like to have this data sent to them. Making sure this is clear up front, it's going to save you some issues down the line. We're going to move on to slide number 18. Some of the other challenges that we know you're facing is how to monitor the effectiveness of your program. What we're going to suggest is gathering your baseline data early in the planning phase, and include the visit patterns of individual clinicians and teams. We know from agencies, and certainly through our telehealth data collection tool pilot, that it was a real problem gathering this information and then being able to, of course, compare it down the road to what their current pattern is with the use of telemonitoring. So it's just a little advice there to gather this data early if you're just starting to implement. Involve your finance people. Involve other departments that can certainly help you gather this data quickly and start a database. So certainly we're going to hope that you choose to use iPro's telehealth data collection tool. You really want to be able to monitor the effectiveness of service utilization costs and your predicted savings through doing this as well, you know, by gathering this data early. Third bullet down is be certain of your high-risk population. And for those of you who need a little clarity, telemonitoring as a whole should be reducing your acute care hospital and your emergent care rates. If it's not, you really need to make sure that there is some correlation between your acute care hospitalization risk assessment and the implementation of telemonitoring on a patient. So, you know, putting it on everyone is wonderful, and certainly I think most agencies would love to have that ability to put a telemonitor in on every one of their patients. But if you're starting out, you don't have many monitors, or if you're finding that your ACH rate is not going down, you want to maybe target a population to place these monitors on. It's just something to consider, to think about. If your high-risk population is COPD and CHFers, then certainly you want to make a push to get every one of those patients a monitor as soon after the start of care as possible. And also then, of course, we want you to consider the use of the iPRO's telehealth data collection tool. And Lexi is going to be talking a bit about that. And there's also information regarding our telehealth data collection tool on our website. Okay, guys, moving on to slide number 20. Tackle the challenges. I thought I'd really help you feel that fall is coming by using, some pre-football terms here. So we're going to tackle the challenges by your patient concerns. What are you going to do about this? One, having written materials that the patient can understand, and this was actually part of the best practice intervention package, and some of those ideas of using brochures to kind of entice patients and give them more information about what you do and how this telemonitor works. So some of the challenges and tackling the challenges that the intervention package alluded to was using lay language, avoiding medical jargon, and address the patient's fears and myths that we've just talked about, because they may not be saying it, but they have to be thinking it. Providing pictures of elderly patients using the monitor is also very effective, of course, and including patient testimonials to kind of give them a little proof. You know, our population wants proof that this is going to work for them. Okay, going further on to patient concerns on slide 21. Educating your clinical staff in effective approaches to introducing the telemonitoring to patients and families. Sure, you're all sitting there saying, boy, if I hear one more staff member tell me the patient refused to have this monitor, I'm going to scream. I think if that's what you're hearing, okay, that if that's one of the problems you've identified in implementation of your program, and it might be a good idea to kind of talk with the staff, not a 5-minute, 10-minute in-service. We know how valuable your time is. But again, staff, to change their behavior, they need repetition. They need it demonstrated. They need to have role-playing. They're not going to change behavior just because we said to change their behavior. You need to sit, take a minute, role-play with the staff. How exactly is the staff member introducing the idea to the patient? Certainly, we all can use some support when it comes to changing what we do and what we say on a routine basis. If your staff doesn't believe in telemonitoring, certainly the patient will not believe in it, okay? So just some advice there, okay? And they have some real good ideas in the best practice intervention package and how you can tackle that challenge. Moving on again, keeping up with our staff buy-in mode here, tackling the challenges of your staff buy-in on slide 22. Providing incentives for your staff is one thing to take into consideration and what may make your program a success. Healthy competition amongst your teams is a good thing. If they know that in your champion nurses or on a team where telemonitoring is working well, you know what, the rest of your staff is going to want to feel that too. So that's good, healthy competition, to be able to showcase a team that had a great success in reducing an unavoidable acute care hospitalization and rewarding that team. The rest of the nurses and clinicians are going to go, hey, you know, I can do this too. I do this, and I want to get that attention. So just take that into consideration and, you know, in providing incentives for your staff. Okay, moving on to slide 23. This is tackling the challenge of your leadership action. We just can't emphasize enough, and as I said, you know, we need to communicate what the goals of your program is constantly. It can't just be mentioned once or twice, or when things don't go well every quarter that we kind of readdress it again. This should be a communication that goes on constantly in your agency. Part of case conferencing and supervisors asking, you know, where's the telemonitor on this case? It just should be part of your day-to-day operations. So just remember how important the need to communicate this is. And don't assume that because the staff was already told that they remember. Because 9 times out of 10, there's 50 million things going through their minds during staff in-service. And it's very worth repetition and repeating this over and over again. Moving on to slide 24 and tackling the challenges of your physician buy-in. I think these were some really useful pieces of information on this best practice intervention package. Of course, knowing how difficult this has been, so we had a few physicians give their opinions on, one, the value of telemonitoring, and two, you know, what they need to make this successful. So you can use these quotes for your marketing for physicians to say, okay, but this is, you know, pretty much what we're trying to say now is you need to understand how important this is and what we need to make it a success. Okay, and slide 25 kind of highlights some of this. Educating the physician of the usefulness of this telemonitoring. One, like I said before, physicians are under pressure, more and more pressure, to improve the way they manage chronic conditions. If the time wasn't right a year ago, I assure you, the time is right now. So you might want to use this strategy again to convince the physician of its worthy, of the worthiness. It's going to have the physician will have a decrease in emergent care and unnecessary hospitalization. And again, emphasizing the need for specific parameters and PRN orders is a real important part of your telemonitoring project. And I'm sure any one of you out there who has experience in this regard knows that this is one of the biggest challenges. Again, having a champion physician who can truly understand that if they give these parameters and PRN orders, it actually decreases the amount of data they receive and the amount of phone call contacts they are receiving from the agency. So what they did beautifully in this intervention package on slide 26, grab a screenshot for you of the physician connection, and they developed a brochure that highlights those just those areas that we've talked about regarding physician buy-in. So you really might want to take either survey your physicians, find out who's not happy with your project, get out there and talk with them, demonstrate its usefulness, and get this brochure out because it's got some neat tidbits of information that I'm sure can help add to your success of your project. Okay, we're going to move on to slide number 27. Again, we know a lot of you have had a lot of success in contracting with managed care organizations to be reimbursed for your telehealth, your telemonitoring efforts. We know that's coming down the road for other areas, but not quite yet, but Lexi will talk more about that. But the managed care connection here is a good way to market your telemonitoring efforts within the managed care organizations. Certainly, you know, and those of you who have a maternal child health program, this has been, it's proven to be very successful with commercial and managed care organizations and you guys being reimbursed first for that important service. Okay, we're going to move on to slide 28. I took the next three slides to go through this because I think it's critical that you take this agency self-assessment. Regardless of what phase of implementation you're in, you really need to go through these step by step by step. If you miss a step, you're going to see later on that, geez, gosh, I should have thought about this, because guarantee it's going to come up in your implementation phase. So just kind of, we're just going to take a few tidbits so we can move forward. Do you have the specific acceptance criteria? Do you have an exclusion criteria? Do you know what you're going to do if you don't have enough monitors and how you're going to handle a waiting list with patients? Do you have a plan to get the monitors out there as fast as possible? I'm still on slide 28. You know, we know when the patient is most at risk for hospitalization, and 2 weeks from the start of care may be just a little too late to get that monitor out there. You know, do you have a plan to assist the staff to get those monitors out within the first 24 to 72 hours of the start of care when it can provide the most value? So you need to think about that and what your protocol is going to be for implementation and getting it out to the patient's home quickly. Moving on to 29 for staff education and involvement, just a few tidbits here. You know, I'm sure you've all got your champions out there and know who they are or are in the process of choosing them. Again, it's a real important component of this to be able to spread the word, identifying your physician champion as well, and making sure that telemonitoring becomes part of your orientation so it becomes fully integrated in your day-to-day operations. Holding competencies on an annual basis to ensure that the staff still remembers how to use it if they haven't used it in a while. And, of course, like we talked about, using incentives to entice your staff to utilize it more often. Going on to slide 30, to be able to really evaluate how you're managing this program by using physician surveys, patient surveys, okay, being able to compare your patient population of those with and without telemonitoring, as well as your acute care hospitalization rate of which patients had telemonitoring and did not. It's a vital component to your quality monitoring. Also being able to track the number of PRN visits. Remember, this is designed to improve your service utilization. So you want to make sure that that's what you can prove down the road to your board to be able to keep this program around for many years to come. Also with case coordination, are you including the discussion of telemonitoring in your supervisory case conferences? Do you have does the agency have a way to confidentially hold this information in a place where that's not quite as busy, either whether you have a central station or you're doing video monitoring? The privacy and confidentiality component needs to be thought through very thoroughly. But intake and admissions, are your staff communicating this option to your referral sources, and is it being identified at referral? So it's another opportunity to get those monitors out there very quickly. Okay, and we're moving on to slide 31. Again, you've heard me, all of us say this a million times. Please don't recreate the wheel. These tools are available to you, and they have been available for the last few years on MedQuick with the Home Telehealth Reference 2005, and certainly you know where you can access this best practice intervention package from homehealthquality.org. And what I did on the next slide, on slide 32, was give you the list of available templates. Please don't spend the time doing this type of handiwork when you need to be out there talking to your staff about how they're going to make this a success. So these were made that you can, in a Word document, that you can change to your agency's liking, adding your logo and everything you need to personalize it, but just making sure that you follow this to get everything going right from the beginning. Slide number 33, I just wanted to highlight again the discipline tracks, as we talked about in the first few slides, that we want the staff to be fully involved. You know, what this has in this package is a full explanation of the program's value. So 100% of your staff should be taking this post-test to be able to really see if they're in line with your direction right now as leaders. Your rehab staff, don't exclude them from implementation. Actually, you may find a tremendous success with having your therapist take this out as well. Medical social worker, though nobody is excluded from this, they have the ability to identify needs that may not have been identified at start of care. Your home health aides. Including home health aides in the orientation to telemonitoring is vital. Think of the patient who doesn't trust and how much influence our aides have in helping patients understand what it can do for them, and how the aides can also preach their success stories that they've seen with other patients. The home health aides are invaluable marketing tools for you guys out there, so don't miss that opportunity. Make sure you get them involved, and so they know what it means when the patient's monitoring, because they will be curious and want to know how the telemonitoring actually works. On page 34, I listed the resources that are in your best practicing intervention package this month, and this came from page 32. Please don't, again, reinvent the wheel. There are plenty of resources out there that have already kind of put it together, policies and infection control policies that you can just take right from the websites. Okay, great. We're doing well with time here, and, of course, the last two slides are your contact information for our home health team here at iPro and, of course, for our state associations. And at this time, I'd love to turn the call over to Lexi Silver. Lexi?
I'm right here.
Hi, how are you? Great. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm going to just take a few minutes going over some slides, which I hope you have, that are a result of a survey we did of telehealth providers. And I'm not going to go through and read the data to you. I think you can, you can read that yourself. The one thing I want to bring up that's important in all these is, and Vicki has talked about this over and over today, and we're talking about the percentage of your units that are out in the field. And this is going to play into what I'm talking about with our new legislation. If you go to slide 8, you'll see that 41% of the people who responded to this survey that they had 50% of their video units out at all times. And that's not where they should be, obviously. And this is going to become more and more of an issue as we start talking a different form of reimbursement, which I'm going to get to in a minute, in which you're going to be paid by the patient and providing services on a monthly basis. You're going to see our grant monies kind of trickle off. There is one more grant round coming out, a very small one, for $1 million from the Department of Health, but that's pretty much going to be it for it from New York for you buying equipment. So you want to start, as Vicki said, you start need to plan not only on how to get those units out there, but as you're buying more units, for those of you who are implementing or are planning, you need to think about what kind of equipment you're going to buy. If you look at the number of people responded to this, there's an awful lot of small new providers, and it could be that this low percentage or high percentage, whichever way you want to look at it, is a result of new programs that are just getting off the ground. But if you go to slide 10, you'll see that the reverse is true of the non-video. And what that tells me that perhaps some of you misjudged when you first bought your units and maybe didn't do a needs analysis. Maybe you overestimated your use for the video units. Usually, industry standards say 85% of the patients can be serviced by a non-video unit. So you want to think about that as you're developing your program. I think that has a lot to do with why these units aren't in the field. Some patients find them invasive. I know that they're wonderful for their own purposes, but just think you need to think about that going forward. Again, I'm not going to read the slides. I'm going to go right into the legislation because I know that's what people want to talk about. Going to slide 17, this is just the preview for the legislation. The commissioner, that's the Commissioner of Health, shall establish initial demonstration rates or fees for telehealth services as provided for this subdivision by no longer of October 1st of this year. So, you know, what exactly does that mean? That means that the Department of Health is in the process of establishing demonstration rates, not final rates, for reimbursement for home telehealth. This is going to be a little different than what we're used to. It's going to be a monthly basis. It's going to be for long-term care. In other words, these units are going to be able to be in the home. This is Medicaid dollars we're talking about. And it's going to be ideal for long-term care providers, patients that you have on service for a long time. You're not going to be swapping units in and out every month, every 6 weeks. So it brings a different kind of overview to the industry. Slide 20. The purpose of this legislation is to assist in the effective monitoring and management of units whose medical, functional, and or environmental needs can be appropriately and cost-effectively met at home through the application of telehealth. Don't forget the cost-effective piece. This is Medicaid dollars. Reimbursement is going to be appropriate where the provision of telehealth services can reduce the need for on-site or in-office visits or acute or long-term care facility admissions. Now, one thing it's important to point out that Medicaid is not as concerned with hospitalizations as many of you who deal with Medicare are used to. So when we go out and say that telehealth reduces hospitalizations, well, those are paid for primarily by Medicare. And when you're talking about Medicaid, they're more interested in visits to see the doctor. Across the service utilization of healthcare services, nursing home admissions. So it's a different, again, this is very, very financially driven, and it's hard for us to get out of this if you're a clinician to think about, no, we're not talking about outcomes, we're talking about saving money, and thank God this does both. However, going on slide 20, clinical circumstances, congestive heart failure, diabetes, you can read these. These are some of the things that can be monitored. They're not limited to. We actually wrote most of this legislation here at HCA, so we tried to make it as broad as we could. Services included, medication management is one of them. We don't know at this time. I've had a lot of conversations with the Department of Health whether actually the med dispensers are going to be included at a different rate. We aren't sure exactly how this is going to be set up as far as reimbursement, and I don't think the Department of Health knows at this time either. Slide 22, again, I started to say this is really a change in the way telehealth is financed, and I think you're going to need to do more needs analysis about what kind of equipment suits most of your needs. It's very nice to have high-end equipment, but we all know that if Medicaid is reimbursing for this, they're not going to be giving you as much money as perhaps we'd like. So it's going to have to become a tighter program. It's going to be a long-term use. You need to do this on sound business principles and needs analysis. This is going to become another program as part of your stable of programs offered. And I guess one example I'm trying to give when I say on this slide you need a blue book, when we need blue book cost data, if you're going to go buy a car, a lot of you, you know, will go to a dealer and you'll see the price and you'll see the manufacturer's, you know, represented cost or the dealer's invoice. And a lot of you or your husbands, your wives might go home and say, well, if it's a used car, how much is it really worth? Let's look it up. Now, if the dealer gave you a price of $5,000 and the blue book says this car is only worth $4,000, you're not going to want to pay that $5,000. And that's exactly where the state's coming from on cost data. We don't have any of this data. We can't tell them how much it's worth. So this is something that we're going to have to go forward as an industry and try and provide. And when Vicki was talking about me talking about the data collection tool, this is exactly the kind of information we need. They're not particularly interested in how many hospitalizations it saves. Yes, that's wonderful. We have that data. It keeps people out of the hospital, improves outcome. But how much does this cost? How much does it worth? Is it really worth as far as services provided? What's the nuts and bolts of this? It's, again, it's kind of a cool way of looking at things, but this is a financially driven program. I can't emphasize that enough. So that's why when we start talking about collecting data, I know it's labor-intensive. However, there's two reasons you really need to do this. One is because your own CFO is going to be looking at this, and two, it's because the whole system needs this as an aggregate basis so that whatever rate gets set, and again, we're not sure what it is. The Department of Health is meeting with us after Labor Day to review what they've had. They've talked to other states. We've sent them tons of our own information. But still, we don't have that much to support what it actually costs, what's your overhead. One thing they've been doing is looking at other states. We know that New York is land of taxes. It costs a lot more to do business here. We certainly don't want our rate set on Kansas, where a visit in Kansas, they're paying 100% of an in-person visit. However, that rate is $47. And I don't think we want that to happen here. So, Vicki, that's pretty much it in a nutshell from me.
Oh, Lexi, thank you so much. And Yashira, can we open the lines up to some questions?
Of course, Ms. Agramonte. If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you simply wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. Let's give it a minute.
Sure. While we're waiting for Yashira to queue up our questions, the one when Lexi and I talked about this presentation, that was the one statement that kept going through my mind is how New York, how our reimbursement rates can be compared to that of Kansas. So, you know, really think about, guys, how you're going to contribute to your futures in this program by providing some type of data analysis of, you know, what your costs are and the overhead. So you can certainly contribute to New York State as a whole and how you guys are going to be reimbursed in the future. So it's very profound.
Well, I think it's also a good blend of the clinical piece with the financial, which is something, and those worlds run, you know, kind of in parallel, but they never intersect.
Never intersect, that's right.
And we really know that it's, you know, it's both cost-effective and outcome-effective to use telehealth. And if we want to continue to, you know, have those good outcomes to, you know, help our patients, then we have to be able to, you have to be financially able to do that. And that's really the bottom line. You have to be able to afford to provide what we all really believe in as a great service. So.
Agreed. Any questions, Yashira?
I'm not showing anyone in queue.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that's all right. You know, certainly you know how to contact us. If there's anything that we can do to help support your efforts, you know to call the us here at iPro. Any one of us will be happy to help you and give you more ideas. And certainly you have the support of your associations as well. So we'd like to thank you for joining us today, Nell, in today's call.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes today's program.